award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Thank you. Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. We've been trying to reach B.B. Jordan, and we have not been successful so far, so we're just going to be moving right ahead. And I want you to know that if we're interrupted, it'll be because we've been able to connect with her by the phone. So we will be bringing her on as soon as she is available. I wanted to start off the program today, which, by the way, will open up the phone lines early at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. I wanted to share a thought with you. Every time you turn on the television, depending on what station you go to, or on the radio, the biggest thing that's being discussed are elections. And I hear all kinds of conversations about leadership, and what makes a good leader. And we get so much of the same political rhetoric. And I don't typically go into politics or discuss that venue, and I'm not really going to discuss that now. But I think I'd like to share with you something today, since I have the time, that really is very important when you are looking at being a leader, or you are wanting to show yourself that you are a leader, or someone else that you are capable of that. It means you really have to think. And you have to be able to think clearly where you deal with facts. And you try to keep yourself clear from bias, etc., as you possibly can. I'm going to continue this thought. My guest, B.B. Jordan, is with us right now. B.B., welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on the air with you.
Well, I am delighted. Now, B.B., your book, Swahili Chic, The Feng Shui of Africa, has to be one of the most gorgeous books I have ever seen.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I have a very, very dear friend who is African-American, and when she saw this book, she just drooled. She had never seen anybody take this on, and she said, this is absolutely incredible, the photographs in it. Now, you have been an avid traveler. You are an entrepreneur. You obviously, from this spectacular book, are a phenomenally fine photographer, and You wanted to do this. Why did you decide that the African design, or that which culturally would be called African design, why did that seem to touch your spirit so much?
Well, Africa is a continent that I think has really been very poorly presented by the press. We tend to focus so much on the hardship there, and so little attention is given to the beauty of the culture, the people, the music. And that's what I wanted to show in the book. I wanted to capture the charm of the interior decorating that so touched my soul when I was there. It's not an easy subject to explore because the decorating style of the Swahili people is really very private style. And so many foreigners, when they do visit the east coast of Africa, don't have the chance to step inside these Swahili stone houses, which are actually made of coral. And I made it my goal to penetrate those thresholds and to share the interior decorating, both the style as well as the philosophy, with readers here in the United States, so they would be able to explore a side of Africa that's rarely seen in the press.
Well, not only are you a very lovely woman, but you also have really made a sincere effort to be able to integrate into other cultures, because You have a BA in International Relations from Swarthmore College and also a Master's in African Study from the Institute of African Studies in Geneva, Switzerland. And you've studied at the London Film School. You speak 5 languages. You've lived on 4 continents. And currently you live in California and you have your family. The first, well, you have this wonderful, wonderful way of photographing the people along with the environment. And there is this one photo I'm looking at right now of 3 women who are standing on a cliff area, and there's this magnificent blue ocean that's out in front of them, a sailboat, and each and every one of these women, they are attired in this magnificent color of design, and it's just exquisite, and I just am amazed. Now, I noticed that they've wrapped their heads, and they are these Muslim people that I am looking at, Muslim women.
That's right. Along the coast of East Africa is a Muslim community, the Swahili people. But and that is one of the reasons why I wanted to do the book, because I feel that in the past couple of years, the American public has been exposed only to one aspect of Islam, and that they don't perhaps appreciate that there are many different forms of how Islam is practiced, and you really can't examine any philosophy of a religious philosophy without looking at the local context in which it is practiced. Along East Africa, it's very fascinating because the Islamic doctrine is mixed with Swahili shamanism, and so it's something that is quite different and really very lovely to see and to experience. I've tried to bring that out with the photographs of the interior decorating, and in the captions I explain what are the influences, whether it's Arabic or African or Asian and European, because this coastline, in fact, the Swahili culture, is a combination of African and Arabian, as well as Asian and European influences.
And it goes back for centuries.
Millennium, 2,000 years old. I maintain that it's probably one of the very first true fusion styles.
Now, you have proverbs in this exquisite script to go throughout the book. And this one that is in front of me now, it says, you cannot change the wind, but you can change the course. And that is a proverb. Every culture has this wisdom that is, to me, timeless. It belongs to everyone. And you bring this out in the book. Now, with many of your photographs, and you present so many different aspects of this environment, I'm looking at this one that's in your rural architecture, and my goodness, it reminds me of buildings in Europe. However, they're using palms to cover the roof. They're using the elements from their own environment, and these are pretty warm temperatures.
Right. What's interesting is that even though these houses are built of coral, and not underwater coral, but rather fossilized terrestrial coral, which is then quarried into bricks, and then the bricks are laid to create walls, the plaster is then made of coral as well, and then a very fine layer of plaster, which creates the quintessential Swahili patina, which looks very much like something that you might see in Tuscany. So it's very interesting that two different cultures using very different materials creates a similar beautiful apricot patina on the walls and the floors of their buildings.
Well, not unlike Tuscany. You say they erected tiered towns on hilly promontories, and they were called stone towns. But just like you said, they were built of coral. And it's really quite interesting when you find similarities in different parts of the world, and it just shows the harmonics that often exist in the human existence dependent on what they've been exposed to and what works for them in their environment.
Exactly. And what I found was so fascinating was when I stayed in these old coral buildings, and I do want to point out that most of the houses that I show are travelers' inns so that people can actually go and stay in them and really experience what it's like to live in a Swahili house. What was so fascinating was that even though these towns are on the equator and it tends to be a very hot environment, without electricity, without air conditioning, these homes stay very, very cool. And I was very pleased in the introduction that the famous paleontologist Richard Leakey wrote. He notes that architects today, especially in that part of the world, should really study these houses and apply some of the same ecological techniques for environmentally friendly houses that the Swahili built, apply them to new houses that could be built today.
The house, the stone houses, you mentioned earlier that they're very private, and I found that your quote by an explorer, Richard Burton, and we're not talking about the actor, folks, this man lived in 1857. He said, the higher the tenement, the bigger the gateway, the heavier the padlock, and the huger the iron studs that nail the door of heavy timber, the greater is the owner's dignity. And I thought, that is amazing to me, because I wouldn't have thought that having padlocks in were a big deal, but they had to be concerned about that just as they were during the days of Rome and today.
The house was considered part of the family's legacy, and so it was very important to build a house that was a permanent structure and that within the house it was well-maintained. Personal grooming as well as maintenance of your house was an expression of gratitude towards God and blessings from God. And then the interior of the house was decorated in a very dignified manner, not to show off the great wealth that you have, but rather to feature one or two prized possessions that encapsulate the history of the family. So the houses are really very noble, majestic structures. But it's interesting because when you walk through the towns, all of the houses from the outside, the walls are unadorned. They're very simple. The houses are behind these walls, and the visitor, the foreigner, just walks through passageways of unadorned walls, and they would not know that behind those heavy doors, behind those simple walls, were such wonderful houses to discover.
I think in different parts of Europe, that was, and among the Arabs, that was a typical patterning. And I remember vaguely something about Jewish quarters in Europe. They didn't want to draw attention to themselves, so they would keep that simplicity on the outside. And when you'd walk in, you'd have these magnificent courtyards. It would just boggle the mind, but it was designed that way so that it wouldn't encourage thieves to come to the direction you didn't want them to come. One of the points that you have in your photography that I think is just exquisite, and this has something to do with the Muslim religion itself, they don't use images with art. But like the Taj Mahal, there are these magnificent, exquisite carvings that's in the doorways, in the walls. They have this magnificent artistry that is done. When someone is building their home, when you talk about the feng shui of the Swahili home, how is this incorporated, and why did you say this is the feng shui of Africa? Explain that to us.
Well, because these homes are built according to a standard layout, and the layout is based on the environment, ecological factors, but it's also manifests the philosophy, so that it's not just a layout, but it is an implementation of a philosophy towards life. And basically, what makes these houses so different is that they're laid out on an axis of privacy. So the most private and male space is actually the walkway right in front of the house. And then the second most public and male area is a porch, which is just inset into the wall where neighbors can sit and chat. Non-family members may make it inside the house up to the first landing where the family lives to a reception room, but no males, no one other than the family members would penetrate to the more private areas, the female areas of the house. And the most private would be the master bedroom at the very back of the house with its own master bathroom suite. And I have to point out that way back when Europe was living in the Dark Ages, the Swahili people had running water and plumbing and very sophisticated and beautiful bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was because the ventilation and the light comes from a center atrium, and the rooms or galleries, they call them, are stacked one behind the other. So as you go deeper and deeper into the house, it becomes darker and darker, and it could become claustrophobic because there are very few windows so that the cool air is conserved. So what they did was they implemented a style of just absolutely beautiful carvings on the wall, which is carved into the coral walls, beautiful white carvings, and they're like meditative Zen niches where one beautiful object is displayed. And much like a tokodomo in a Japanese house, the contemplation of that beautiful altar with one piece of artwork seems to just evaporate the worries and the stresses of the day as you lose yourself in the geometric shapes and the beauty of these objects. It was just a really very wonderful to experience that and to really feel the difference between the public male spaces and the very private female spaces. And I think this is something that can be incorporated into our lifestyle and our decorating. We tend to have houses that are open to everyone, to whoever walks into the house, to the children, to the pets. And I think it's very important to keep a part of your house, a part of yourself, which is very private, where you nurture your own spirit, and it's not open to inspection and criticism by everyone who happens to walk past.
I think that with many individuals, that's something that they often yearn to have, is enough space where they can have that isolation if they desire it. And I think that's something that is very, very good as a comment, because we do need to have that place where we can have our private space. And that's something I think that's inherent in the human spirit. I'd like to ask you a question. Being of European background and female, with the traditions of Islam, you have these fabulous, fabulous photographs of some very, very prominent people. How was it, with you not being Islamic, that they were okay with you coming in and photographing their privacy?
I think because I had taken a lot of time to learn about the culture. I learned some Swahili. I also spoke Arabic. And so when I approach any new culture, I always try and learn so that people understand that I'm there as a traveler, not as a tourist, that I'm interested in the exchange of ideas instead of just, having a luxurious vacation. And I think that when you approach people, wherever you are, whatever the circumstance, if you're truly interested in them, they open up and they're happy to show you their personality and their spirit. And that's how I was able to photograph people in a culture where typically it's very difficult to do that. But it was very important to me because without having the benefit of the hospitality of the Swahili people, which is a value they treasure and they really consider very important, I wouldn't have been able to write this book and take the photographs. And so it was very important for me to try and capture in their eyes that welcoming spirit that they shared with me that was so important.
Well, they are very warm, pleasant people from everything that you've said. You've had these awesome, awesome photographs of the natural environment that is there, the beautiful owls that they have. You have the different homes. You have all different types of furnishing styles. You've got history in your book. It is just fascinating. But and again, the photography is breathtaking. You did underwater photography as well as the photography on land and going into people's homes, etc. How much time did it take you to put this together?
Actually, it took me less than a year, probably about 4 months to do the photography over three different trips. But then it took me a lot of time. I came home and I researched. I wrote about each different house. That was a very interesting process because I found, as I examined closely the photographs and tried to make sense of everything, it was as if the photographs was telling me and uncovering a story. Then I had to put together a publishing deal, and that was the most challenging because a lot of publishers weren't interested in publishing a book about Africa with Sheikh as part of the title. And as I said, that was precisely why I wanted to do this book. They were also reticent to do a book about a Muslim tourist destination. They felt that people wouldn't be interested in going on vacation to a Muslim section of the world. And again, I felt that that was precisely why the book needed to be published. But, I did manage to pull it off, and I'm very pleased that I've won an award from our councilwoman, Diane Watson, for the book as a significant contribution to the community. And I am very proud of it. I worked with a wonderful designer. I had a lot of input from Swahili experts, and it's really been a collaborative effort that I think we're all proud to see the final result out there.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it is absolutely exquisite. I think as a gift to someone that it does design work or is interested in Africa or loves beauty or likes history, you've combined this all together so exquisitely. Swahili Chic, the feng shui of Africa, Bibi Jordan is my guest. Bibi, I'm going to ask you a question. When you did this book, what was the biggest thing that changed with you in finishing this and putting this all together? What was its effect upon you as an individual?
I think it was the satisfaction of writing a book on a subject that no one else had written, and to be able to present it in such a way that regardless of if you're interested in Africa, I think this is a book that will intrigue people. And I think that that's really what I'm most proud of, that it's not a book that's just going to be read by Africa aficionados, but people who may really not have thought a great deal about African art or interiors will be interested in it because they are interested in interior decorating. And by opening the book, they'll open a window to a new part of the world for them.
You have a quote in your book, "Though we travel the world over to find the beautiful, we must first carry it with us, or we find it not." And I think that's a very good way to close out our interview today, because you definitely carry the beauty within yourself, because you were able to see the beauty in where you were. Ralph Waldo Emerson is the author of that quote that you have in your book. Do you have a website that people can go to, Bibi?
Yes, they can take a preview of the book by going to my website, which is bibijordan.com, and that's spelled B as in boy, I, B as in boy, I, Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N.com.
Well, Bibi, it's been a delight having you as a guest. I want to thank you so much for being with us, and may you continue to enjoy your travels, and my gracious, your photography could only keep improving. That's the only thing I could say. It's exquisite. You do a fabulous job.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you, Bibi. This is Donna Thibault. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I've got more good things to share with you, so don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Thibault. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Thibault's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Thibault's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Thibault and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Thibault to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Thibault. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone lines are now open, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. All of those lines are open and available. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then I'll be happy to give you my intuitive insights, and then you're welcome to ask a question about whatever you like. And if you're new as a listener to the Donna Thibault Show, we're so delighted that you're able to join us. And be sure and tell your friends. And by the way, the shows are all archived, so you can listen to them at any time that is your pleasure and not miss one of the wonderful guests that I have on the air. Before we got to Bibi, because we were having a problem with getting her on the phone, and it worked out just wonderfully. She's just a great lady, and her work is just awesome. I was talking about leadership. And Napoleon Hill is one of my favorite teachers. I never had the privilege of meeting the man, but to me, he's the great, 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 great granddaddy of all motivational speakers and people with positive thoughts, etc. And he had done so much research for so many years to learn about the abilities of the mind and to determine what ensures or enables people to be successful. And part of what he wrote in his masterpiece, and these are my words, I feel that his masterpiece, The Law of Success, is absolutely a must-have in your library, because it is a book that you can go back to over and over and over again. It has principles that are timeless in it, and they really have merit. And it took him a long time to do this research. This wasn't something that happened real quickly. In the process of him interviewing people about success and talking to various individuals through the many years, he said he was very fortunate. Now, this was at remember, he did a lot of his research in the early part of the 20th century, and that's what makes it so amazing. He said during World War One, or actually World War Two, excuse me, he was fortunate enough to listen to what he called a great soldier's analysis of how to be a leader. And this was an analysis that was given to student officers of the second training camp at Fort Sheridan. And it was done by a major. It was Major Bach. And this was a man that had a very quiet, unassuming manner. You would never have known that he held the position of major. It just wasn't something that he walked around boasting about. That wasn't what he was. And Napoleon Hill got a copy of the address that this major gave, and he said he believed it to be one of the finest lessons on leadership ever recorded. And I thought I would share it with you today because I think it belongs to everyone, and I think it's a good level of evaluation to consider when you're looking at someone to be in a leadership positioning. Do they have the qualities that they really should have? Or are they talking out of both sides of their mouth? Well, are you able to see the walk that they've walked? Or is it glossed over by what someone else paints for them so there's this illusion around them? And I really like this. So I wanted to, again, share it with you today because it belongs to all of us. Anyone who is going to be a leader, regardless of what level you're going to be demonstrating that leadership on, this is what he said, and I'm going to quote it exactly. Major Bach said, and this was addressing to the student soldiers, "In a short time, each of you men will control the lives of a certain number of other men. You will have in your charge loyal but untrained citizens who look to you for instruction and guidance. Your word will be their law. Your most casual remark will be remembered. Your mannerisms will be aped. Your clothing, your carriage, your vocabulary, your manner of command will be imitated. When you join your organization, you will find there a willing body of men who ask from you nothing more than the qualities that will command their respect, their loyalty, and their obedience. They are perfectly ready and eager to follow you so long as you can convince them that you have these qualities. When the time comes that they are satisfied you do not possess them, you might as well kiss yourself goodbye. Your usefulness in that organization is at an end. From the standpoint of society, the world may be divided into leaders and followers. The professions have their leaders, the financial world has its leaders. In all this leadership, it is difficult, if not impossible, to separate from the element of pure leadership that selfish element of personal gain or advantage to the individual, without which any leadership would lose its value. It is in the military service only, where men freely sacrifice their lives for a faith, where men are willing to suffer and die for the right or the prevention of a wrong, that we can hope to realize leadership in its most exalted and disinterested sense. Therefore, when I say leadership, I mean military leadership. In a few days, the great mass of you men will receive commissions as officers. These commissions will not make you leaders. They will merely make you officers. They will place you in a position where you can become leaders if you possess the proper attributes. But you must make good, not so much with the men over you as with the men under you. Men must and will follow into battle officers who are not leaders, but the driving power behind these men is not enthusiasm but discipline. They go with doubt and trembling that prompts the unspoken question, what will he do next? Such men obey the leader, the letter of their orders, but no more. Of devotion to their commander, of exalted enthusiasm which scorns personal risk, of self-sacrifice to ensure his personal safety, they know nothing. Their legs carry them forward because their brain and their training tell them they must go. Their spirit does not go with them. Great results are not achieved by cold, passive, unresponsive soldiers. They don't go very far, and they stop as soon as they can. Leadership not only demands, but receives the willing, unhesitating, unfaltering obedience and loyalty of other men. and a devotion that will cause them, when the time comes, to follow their uncrowned king to hell and back again if necessary. You will ask yourselves of just what, then, does leadership consist? What must I do to become a leader? What are the attributes of leadership, and how can I cultivate them? Leadership is a composite of a number of qualities, just as success is a composite of the 15 factors. Among the most important, I would list self-confidence, moral ascendancy, self-sacrifice, paternalism, fairness, initiative, decision, dignity, and courage. Self-confidence results first from exact knowledge, second, the ability to impart that knowledge, and third, make light of your troubles, belittle your trials, and you will help vitally to build up within your organization a spirit whose value in time of stress cannot be measured. There is a feeling of superiority of order others that can naturally follow. All of these will give you poise. To lead, you must know. You may bluff all your men some of the time, but you can't do it all the time. Men will not have confidence in an officer unless he knows his business, and he must know it from the ground up. The officer should know more about paperwork than his first sergeant and company clerk put together. He should know more about messing than his mess sergeant, more about diseases of the horse than his troop farrier. He should be at least as good a shot as any man in his company. Now, the letter goes on, and it's a very powerful statement. But just those few points that I brought out in the letter are so very important. If we're going to have the opportunity to be a leader, what example are we going to give? We need to live the kind of life, and we need to be an example for others so that they can have something to look up to. I was having a conversation with someone just this past weekend, and it was a mother that has growing kids, and she was disappointed in a lot of the examples that are around for the kids to see. She said, there's a lot of things up on the screen. There's a lot of stuff on television. I really get frustrated because I really want to have something of quality that my kids can look up to. So she makes a point of bringing into their environment books and materials that enable them to see that there are individuals of quality and character. But you see, it's up to us. She makes the effort. We as individuals must remember wherever we are. We may not be in the military. I'm not in the military. But wherever I am, I have to be conscious of the fact that how I conduct myself in public, how I present myself, what I do, what I say, all of this makes a difference. Now, this speech, and it was quite a long speech, that this major gave, and I can't do it all on the air, but I wanted to bring out some of those points. His point saying to these young men who were being given the position of being an officer, he said, you're an officer. That doesn't mean you're a leader. And then he gave them points and qualities that make a good leader. A good leader rarely is born. Someone that becomes a good leader is one that goes through the path of experience and makes choices and decisions about how they choose to be the person that they want to be. There's an old adage that says, beware of the company you keep, because the company that you keep will bring to you, good, bad, or indifferent, whatever is in association with the company that you keep. Well, it's the same thing with your mind. What are you reading? What are you listening to? What is it that you bring into your environment that inspires you, that makes you feel that you're a better person because of having it in your environment? Is it a beautiful piece of art? Is it a fine piece of literature? Is it a good program? We need to take that positioning of being consciously present with what we are choosing to involve ourselves with. It's something I have to bring attention to all the time. It really is important. And it's something that I felt was a good way to start off this wonderful week, because when we're consciously present, we then have choice. Someone said to me, Donna, it came to my attention that if I don't open my eyes and look at what's going on around me, if I don't ask questions, I'm not going to know what options I may have in front of me. And I said, wow, that's really astute. I was talking with someone this morning that said to me, Donna, I realize the biggest thing that's been keeping me down is fear. I have been so afraid of so many things, and it just, I totally forgot about what I could do to make my life the way I wanted it to be. So often we are looking to other people to be leaders for us so that we can follow them. Yes, there are the leaders and their followers. Isn't it a good thing when we take the positioning of being the leader in our own life, with our own presence, with who we are, and instead of looking to someone else, I'm not saying don't go to people to learn, to be aware of what knowledge they have, but lead your life. Take the leadership positioning in your life. Wow, what a transformation will occur. If you find, like the person I was talking to this morning, that fear suddenly overwhelms you, you say, wait a minute, how can I choose to handle this? Am I going to back away from my own good, or am I going to move forward? Am I going to go back into an old thinking pattern? What kind of filters do I need to change? All of that is so important. Leadership can begin right with where you are, because you can be the leader in your own life. And I wanted to share that with you today because I think that's so important. This is Donna Siebel. Telephone lines are open. If you want to give me a call, 877-876-5227 is the telephone number for the U.S. Canadians, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. We are going to take a break for just a moment. And when we come back, I've got more good things to share. And if you'd like for me to give you a reading on the air, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Talk to you in just a minute. We're taking a break.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Siebel. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Siebel's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Siebel's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Siebel and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast. with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I want to remind those of you, it's getting closer and closer, we're coming up to this week. We are doing a very special event. I am appearing at the 6th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival, which is being held at the LAX Hilton, which is at 5711 West Century Boulevard in Los Angeles. And I'm really excited about this event. There's so many wonderful speakers, and I'm so pleased to be a part of it. They are going to have a spiritual comedy night, a conscious business symposium, and yoga classes daily. It's starting up this Friday, February the 8th, and is going on through the 11th. I will be in attendance there through the 10th, and I will be having a booth, booth number 517. But they have got a great lineup of speakers, and there's going to be Danielle Brinkley, George Noyer, Richard Hoagland, and Dan Millman. There's just so many, many fine individuals. Now, if you want to get your tickets in advance, they have just been incredibly swamped with all kinds of people trying to get information on this. Call 800-367-5777. That's 800-367-5777. And the ConsciousLifeExpo.com is their website. You can go there. You can find out all the information. You can find out where people are located, what's going to be going on there, what products and services are available. So again, go to their website, ConsciousLifeExpo.com. You can call them at 800-367-5777. And I will be speaking there on Saturday, and I'm going to be in booth 517. Friday, we are going to be doing a live broadcast from the site of this wonderful expo, and I'll be talking with a number of people from different backgrounds, and she will be discussing different topics that they're going to be presenting, and you'll find out all kinds of good things. So again, that's the 6th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival, February 8th through 11th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles. Also, at the end of this month, I'm going to be doing an appearance the 22nd, the 23rd, and the 24th at another event. Now, this is for those of you in the state of Washington. It is going to be the Psychic Spectrum Expo. It is going to be held at the Hilton, the DoubleTree Hilton, that's right adjacent to the airport down on Old Highway 99, and it is just going to be an incredible event. It's the biggest one of its kind ever held in the Pacific Northwest. We will also be doing a live broadcast on site there, and I will be speaking each day, and then my booth number there will be 117. This is a great event, so there's two locations that we'll be in, one in Los Angeles and also in the Seattle, Washington area. So I hope to have those of you that are in that event to come by, say hello. I'd love to meet you. It's a great experience. And my goodness, you have so many talented people all in one spot. It really is terrific. So don't forget those two wonderful events. By the way, my newsletter has gone out, and it is posted on my website, so you can have more information about upcoming appearances and all kinds of details that are going to be available to you very readily. And if you should decide you'd like to get my email newsletter yourself directly, all you have to do is send the request, I'd like to be added to your newsletter subscriber list, and send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Tomorrow, we are going to have a delightful guest, Heather Carew. She is in Canada, and she's written a very powerful book called 65 Roses. It is about her family. It is about a very, very dear sister who had cystic fibrosis. We're going to hear a story that I think is just going to really touch your heart and mind in a very special way. Those of us that have seen what a devastating illness can do to a family, to its environment, to economics and everything else, this is something that I think when she wrote this book, she gives such a wonderful perspective and insight into what people go through. But there's the other side, the side of love and awareness and growth and development in the family, in the individual, that I think is especially heartwarming. So again, tomorrow we're going to have 65 Roses with Heather, and then we're going to get into the world of animals with Deborah Potter. We're going to be talking about how you let Buster lead. And then we're going to have Dr. Petty, who is an expert in different healing modalities. We're going to be talking about healing, meaning, and purpose. And we're going to have some quite interesting information to share with you. And then, of course, on Friday, we're going to be doing a broadcast live right at the Expo, the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles. So we've got a dynamic week, a lot of good information, a lot of good material. So I hope that you will join us. I wanted to also give you the phone number again if you want to chat, 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. There are some gadgets that many people want to have, and one of them is a GPS navigation unit. My goodness, during the past holidays, those were displayed everywhere, and you can't go into most of your tech stores and not see them on display, and people really like to use them. Now, there is a little bit of information I wanted to share with you regarding a GPS navigation unit, something that I didn't know, but you always can learn something new, and that's the case with this. I thought that when you had a GPS unit, you had to have a subscription to something or other. But you don't have to. Despite popular beliefs, according to Mark Saltzman, he said GPS units do not require a monthly subscription unless you opt for traffic updates, the bells and whistles on it. They say the GPS latest features look for are text-to-speech translation, where the GPS unit will say the name of the street, multimedia playback to play MP3 and videos and show photos, and also the Bluetooth connectivity to wirelessly connect to your phone to call a point of interest such as a restaurant or to turn your GPS into a speakerphone. It's just amazing to me. Now, there's another item that you might want to consider, and that's a universal remote. Gets rid of your coffee table clutter, at least a piece of it anyway. And also, there is something called the satellite radio. There's more than 150 CD-quality commercial-free channels. And there's just all kinds of goodies that you can find anymore when you go out. Technology is advancing at such a phenomenal rate that it just is amazing to me. And what's so even more amazing is how small things are. When I got a laptop 3 years ago, my goodness, the unit that I got was the top of the line, and it weighs 12 pounds, and it's the devil to take with you when you're traveling. Even if you carry it onto the plane, which you have to do, really, it just is a lot of weight, very bulky. Well, not anymore. Today, you'll find units that are half the price of what was paid 3 years ago, has far more in the way of bells and whistles, and it weighs next to nothing compared to what we had to lug around before. Technology is really moving forward. It is very, very exciting to watch. But it is a challenge to keep up with it. I don't know how a lot of you do it because it is just amazing to me. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. And I want to say, remember always you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. Don't ever forget that leadership is something that you can do for yourself first, and then be an example for others. It will make a big difference.
You have been listening to Madonna Sebo.
Because you'll not only be talking the talk, you'll be walking the walk. Good thing to do, especially for the younger generation. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a magnificent day.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272.
Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Hi, this is